So this thing should pick me up wherever I'm at, right? What's that? It is omnidirectional? It's not. Well, that's too bad. Well, we'll do what we can. If you turn to 1 John chapter 2, I'm going to read just verses 7 through 11 here. In the text before us this morning, we're going to try it again.
Change the channel. Just
change the channel?
Yeah, change the channel. See if that works.
Okay. We'll see if this works. Better? In our text before us this morning, we have what could be called the ultimate example of the fourth condition of fellowship with God. And it comes down to what we may call contrast. While one might see that contrasts are obvious in our day and age, paradoxically, there are those, many that we find, who do not like contrast. But here's the paradox of it. There are many who do not like the contrast. But the paradox is, neither do they like things to be, I'm going to be politically incorrect here now, neither do they like things to be black and white. They prefer everything to be gray in most everything. But yet they don't like contrast. Isn't that interesting? I find it to be so. But along comes the Apostle John, and John tells it like it is. Look what he says. 1 John 2, 7 through 11. Beloved, I am not writing a new commandment to you, but an old commandment, which you have had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word which you have heard. On the other hand, contrast here. I am writing a new commandment to you. See the paradox in that? Which is true in him and in you. Because the darkness is passing away, and the true light is already shining. The one who says he is in the light and hates his brother is in the darkness until now. The one who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for stumbling in him. But the one who hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he is going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes. John's telling it like it is. And he exemplifies that fourth condition of fellowship with God that we talked about last week. The new is the old. What he said in verses 7 through 8. Notice how what John says, how he begins this, though, in verse 7. He's talking to those in the church and those that are amongst him, and he addresses them as beloved. Beloved, I'm not writing a new commandment to you. Now, King James Version reads brethren, but the manuscript evidence, it's clear that John wrote beloved here, not brethren. He would have used a different word if it was to be translated brethren. But John uses the word here, agapetoi, which means beloved. It's a very term John is using for those in the church. John would have us to know that he's calling us beloved. That we are loved. And here what we have is a command. A command to practice brotherly love. And oh, how the world needs to see that. How the world needs to see that in the church, that we are practicing brotherly love. But notice what John says here. He is saying that the new is the old. He is saying that they had it from the very beginning. It wasn't something new. They had it from the beginning of the Christian experience. Do we understand that? That we had that from the beginning of our Christian experience. And it's not something new. John is teaching the exact opposite, you see, of what the Gnostics were teaching. The Gnostics taught, and there are those today who would teach that, hey, I've got something brand new that y'all don't have. And what I have, you can't have because it was given me through special knowledge and through certain special insights. But you can't have it. That's what the Gnostics were teaching. And John comes along and said, no, beloved, you had this. And it's not a new commandment. It's old. It's like Brother Gareth Reese says, John's instructions were as old as the gospel itself. He was reminding them of truths that had regularly been part of the Christian message. John affirms that there never was a gospel that did not have this command at its heart. What was that? You go back to Matthew chapter 22. Look at what Jesus said there. Remember? It says here in verse 34, but when the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered themselves together. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? What's the greatest that there is? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. That's found in Leviticus chapter 19. This is the great and foremost commandment. Jesus then says the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. Jesus was saying, it's not new, guys. It's not new, people. It's old. And it goes all the way back there to Leviticus chapter 19, what Moses said. That's what John is referring to. John says, it is the word which you have heard. What was that word which they had heard? Why, it's just the gospel message. The message of the gospel. It reminds one of Romans 10, verse 17. What does that say? We all know what that says, right? Faith comes by what? Faith comes by hearing. And hearing through what? Through the word. That's what John is saying here. And here comes the paradox, though. He says, it is the word which you have heard. But what was that word? Why, it was the gospel. And what entails it? But here comes the paradox. Here comes the contrast. The new is the old, but yet John says it's also new. How odd. How can something be old but yet new? How can something new be old? That's rather odd, isn't it? But yeah, that's what John says here. In other words, as Brother Gareth Reese says, what in one sense was not fresh, in another sense, is fresh and new. You see, John uses the word for new here. It's kainos. And what it means is, it doesn't refer to something that is brand new, something that was not in existence before. It's not new as far as time is concerned. He doesn't use that word. He used the word kainos, which means it expresses quality. It expresses the fact that it is fresh. It's fresh, opposed to that which is not obsolete. It's not worn out. If he meant something that was never existing before, John would have used the word neos. But he didn't use that. He used the word kainos, expressing quality. It's new in quality, and it's fresh. It's not new as far as point of time. What's John saying here? It's new. It's old, but yet it's new. What he's saying here is that until Jesus came along, this kind of love, what John is talking about here, this kind of love had not been lived out before. Again, a couple of examples you can find in the Gospels. Luke chapter 24, verses 44 and following. What Jesus says. Now he said to them, these are my words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all things which are written about me in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled. Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures, and he said to them, thus it is written that the Christ would suffer and rise again from the dead the third day, and that repentance for forgiveness of sins would be proclaimed in his name to all the nations beginning from Jerusalem. You are witnesses of these things. You have heard these things. You have seen these things. And behold, I am sending forth the promise of my Father upon you, but you are to stay in the city until you are clothed with power from on high. That's what was new. And what was new was what Jesus lived out. That's found in Matthew chapter 22, verses 39 through 40. Well, I had read before. That was what was new. It's like Brother Clinton Gill said years ago, it is old in that it is the beginning of the old covenant. The beginning of the old covenant had all had to do with what Jesus said there, was wrapped up with the law and the prophet. Loving God with all our minds, with all our being, with all our heart, with all our strength. And then loving one another. Loving our neighbor as yourself. And as Brother Clinton Gill said, it is old in that it is the beginning of the old covenant. It is new in that it is the perfection. It is the perfection of the new covenant. See? Why was this new? Because Jesus lived it out in a different way than the Jews ever did. We understand how the Jews perceive people different from them. We can bring this down to today too. How the Jews perceive people different from them. So Samaritans, the people who lived above them, from Judea and Galilee and Samaria, the Samaritans there, the Jews thought of them as nothing better than dogs. Why, you weren't even supposed to go through Samaria as a Jew. That was unheard of territory. You didn't do that. You know what the Jews thought about Gentiles? That would be us now, the Goreim. Goreim is it's not a Jew, a Gentile. But you know what they thought about Gentiles? Gentiles weren't even worth speaking to. You saw one on the street or whatever, you just ignore them. They weren't even worth speaking to. Why? Because they weren't Jews. The Jews believed that Gentiles had the lowest depths of Sheol. The lowest depths of what they considered hell reserved for them, for the Gentiles. They believed that Abraham and Sheol and the abode of the dead, he was standing there and whoever died, whenever they come up, if they were a Jew or the Gentile, Abraham would open the door to hell. To that section of the abode of the dead, and that's where the Gentiles would go. And they believed that Abraham was gladly doing that, that he was laughing while that was happening. That's what the Jews thought about different people. Do you know what the Jews thought about females, about women? Well, they weren't worth much either. You didn't talk to them. So along comes Jesus. And Jesus turns that upside down. Turns the tables on them. Speaks to Samaritans. Not only did he speak to Samaritans and go through Samaria, he talked to a Samaritan woman. Wow. Do such a thing. talked about those who were welcome into, would be welcome into the kingdom outside of the Jewish religious leaders that wouldn't be. He talked about other places that were not Jewish and how they would be perceived. See, Jesus didn't see people as his fellow kinsmen did. He saw people as God would want them to be seen. As fellow mankind that God had created. Reminds me of what Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 16. Therefore, from now on, we recognize no one according to the flesh. Even though we have known Christ according to the flesh, yet now we know him in this way no longer. What Paul is saying is, and it's like what he says in Galatians is about, is the walls are broken down. Paul says there's no distinction. Something that our society needs to learn today. There's no distinction. And John says here that it is true in him and in you in verse 8 here. What's true in him and in you? Why, just this, Jesus' life. The love which Jesus commanded becomes new. How does it become new? Come down to what Jesus said. John 13, a new commandment I give you. But yet it wasn't new. It was old. But it was new in quality. It was new as far as freshness is concerned. Because what Jesus said, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I have loved you. And oh, how people need to see that from the church. How they need to see that from us. And the love which Jesus commanded becomes new for us. And for us in the church and what John is saying here. How? As they put it into practice. As they put it into practice daily. And the next phrase introduces the reason why. Another contrast. We see contrast exemplified. He introduces the reason why. Look what he says. Because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining. Another contrast. Darkness and light. John says it's passing away, present tense. It's going on while John is writing. As Brother Gareth Reese says, the thing John writes is new is because Christians are living in a new age, the age when darkness is already passing. So a new kind of love can be expected and exemplified. What is that true light that's already shining? Well, it's just this. It refers to the gospel message. What he's talking about here is just what is talked about in Matthew chapter 12. Verse 32 here. Whoever speaks a word against the Son of Man, it shall be forgiven him. But whoever speaks against the Holy Spirit, it shall not be forgiven him, either in this age or in the age to come. That is the truly unpardonable sin. That's how Jesus says in Matthew 12, verse 33, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad, for the tree is known by its fruit. It's what Paul says in Galatians chapter 1, verse 4. Who gave himself for our sins so that he might rescue us from this present evil age, according to the will of our God and Father. That's what the true light is. That's what it refers to, the gospel message. And as Brother Gareth Reese says, it is in this sense in which the real differs from the unreal, the genuine from the spurious, the substance from the shadow, the prototype from the type. And this leads to the next and the greatest contrast of all, verses 9 through 11, where John says that love is really light, and hate is darkness. But verse 9 introduces another false claim of the heretics, and John uses the present tense participle here. The one who says he is in the light. They were saying they were in the light, but guess what? These heretics, they could care less about their brother. They could care less about their fellow human being. They were indifferent towards them. Why? Because they didn't have the special knowledge that they had. They had more than what others had. So John's about to show that this is totally false. Notice what he says. Hates his brother. That's strong words, isn't it? He used the present participle, and what he's talking about is an attitude. That's a word that's bandied about often today, isn't it? Hate? Well, you're a hater. Or she's a hater. Those are words that are thrown out there, but without thinking much about it, aren't they? And notice what John says, though. Hate his brother? Again, it's an attitude. It's an indifference towards a brother in his need. Ignatius, years after this, not too many years afterwards, John wrote this, because it was about in 110 AD, Ignatius said this, talking about these heretics like this, the Gnostics. He said, For love they have no care. None for the distressed, none for the afflicted, none for the prisoner or for him released from prison, none for the hungry and thirsty. They could care less. And many people who use that word hate, the way it's bandied about today, they don't think about what they're actually saying, because many of them could really care less. And John says here that they remain in darkness. He uses a present tense here. I like what William Barclay said concerning this. He said, we ought always to remember that he who has in his heart hatred, resentment, and the unforgiving spirit can never grow in the spiritual life. So So then he gives a contrast in verses 10 through 11. He uses the word loves here. When he uses it, he uses it in the present tense. It is a continuous action. The one who continues to love abides. Present tense, continuous action. What is John saying here? Something that the world needs to see. Something that we need to show the world. And that is this: the Christian acts, not just talks, but acts upon the gospel message, upon love. It is, as Gary Berg says, biblical scholar, love becomes a genuine value only when it is tested. Only when we must reach beyond ourselves and love someone we do not wish to love. That's the caliber of love John has in mind here. Did you catch that? Then John uses the word scandalon, which means to stumble, or it's like a snare or a trap. He said, the one who loves his brother abides in the light, abides in Jesus, and there is no cause for stumbling. There is not a scandalon in him. It's not something that you'll stumble over, not something that could be a trap. It's not something that can going to lead you to sin. But notice what he says. But the one who hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness, lives in the darkness, stays in the darkness, and does not know where he is going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. And when John uses this, he uses a present participle, which means what he is saying is it is habitually the case of how one lives. John is saying they're in the darkness and they walk in it and they live in it and they like it. You know there's people like that? Kind of shades of John chapter 12. Verse 35. So Jesus said to them, for a little while longer, the light is among you. Walk while you have the light, so that darkness will not overtake you. He who walks in the darkness does not know where he goes. While you have the light, believe in the light, so that you may become sons of light. The darkness, see, has blinded them. Someone long ago said, and I don't know who it was, but someone long ago said that sin cuts the optic nerve of the soul. You see, if the optic nerve is cut, you can't see, can you? I read about the Alfred Plummer, who wrote commentary on the epistles of John, once said that ponies years ago in Wales and England were used in the coal mines. But you know the thing about those ponies? They never let them leave the mines. They kept them down in the mines. Working the mines, these ponies, in Wales and England. So what naturally happened to the ponies? Exactly. They went blind. Why? Because they weren't any light. They weren't in light anymore. They were underground, in darkness. And if you were in underground and in darkness, what would eventually happen? Wouldn't it be the same thing? Wouldn't you go blind? But see, many people out there are spiritually blind. They're kept in the dark. And eventually they become totally spiritually blind. These are some strong words, what John has for us, for who are followers of Christ, that we must pay attention to. Why? And I would say, submit to you, brothers and sisters, the reason why it's important that we pay attention to these words is because of the antagonism. Because of the antagonism that is displayed for Christians and the church today. We need to show them a different way. We need to show them out of the way of darkness. In order to do so, we need to practice what John says here. That we're in the light and not in the darkness by how we live and how we show that love, see? That's what John is saying. Strong words for us, but things for us really to take to heart and listen to. Because while things may be as they were, even in the days of Noah, this is something that people miss as far as the days of Noah is concerned, what Jesus said. And so when he comes again, it will be in the days of Noah. He said they'll be getting married, you know, and they'll be going around doing all these things. But what they miss is this. Were people just being given in marriage and, you know, and getting married and doing all kinds of things like that in the days of Noah? What was it like in the days of Noah?
About the regular
exactly. That's what people miss when Jesus said, and so it will be in the days of Noah. We're rapidly getting there. See, how does the church react? How do we live in the midst of all of that? Well, John gives us a way, see, what he says here. And words for us to really to take to heart. Let's stand, we're going to sing, "For God So Loved the World." I mean, that's what it's all about. Alan?